20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 243 of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. My name is Andy Herman. I am a writer for Cheesehead TV. You, of course, can follow me on Twitter at Scani Sports. Really great show lined up for you today. I know recently some of our analysts have been really breaking down and talking about the Packers' athletic thresholds heading into the draft. A couple of our analysts have mentioned RAS or relative athletic scores. Well, today I'm incredibly excited to be talking to the creator of RAS, Kent Lee Platy of Pride of Detroit, to break down exactly what RAS is and kind of what it's meant for the Packers in recent years. I want to really just jump in and get started right away. So let me introduce Kent to Packers Nation. He is a Lions fan, so be a little bit gentle. As I mentioned, he is a writer for Pride of Detroit and a creator of the Relative Athletic Score. He is a veteran, a Lions fan, and a self-described math junkie and football nut. You can follow him on Twitter at MathBomb. Kent, thank you so much for joining me today, and welcome to the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
I appreciate it, man. Glad to be on.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited about this. A lot of our draft analysts that have been starting to talk about the draft have already been kind of going in depth a little bit about RAS, but I figure no better person to get it to than from the man himself. So really, really thankful for you joining us today. Before we jump into RAS and kind of into the draft, which is at the forefront of everyone's mind, can you start by telling our listeners just a little bit about yourself and how you really broke into writing about football?
Sure. You know, I've always loved football. I'm a lifelong football fan and Lions fan, so I'm used to both watching good football and seeing the not so good part of football. But I've always been a draft fan too. And back in around 2013, I started getting really heavily into covering the draft itself and writing about the draft. It was mostly Lions centric at that time, but that's when I started looking at metrics. And you had guys that would come out of the draft that you'd hear the same thing: "Oh, this guy's super athletic," or "He's not very athletic." And sometimes the numbers, they didn't really make sense to me the way that they were being described. Le'Veon Bell's a great example because he was often described as a below average athlete, but that was all because he ran a 4.6 40. When you looked at all of his other numbers, they were fantastic. And there wasn't really a reason that they should have been calling him a bad athlete to begin with. But there isn't really a good way as a fan to quantify that. You know, we can look at the metrics and say, yeah, that's a bad metric. But if you don't know about the draft, do you know if a 4.6 is any good? If it's really bad, if it's just a little bit bad, maybe it's just slightly below average. So I tried to quantify everything into a nice, clean metric that was easy to understand. Anybody can understand a 0 to 10 score. Anybody can understand something that's color-coded with red, yellow, and green. So I created the score that would compare a player to everyone at that position dating back. I got data all the way back to 1987, so it goes all the way back that far. And it compares all of the individual metrics. It creates an average, and then the average is compared to all of the average for those players. And that gets you your final score from 0 to 10. It's been fairly predictive when it comes to draft slotting and in some instances, statistical stuff like 1,000-yard seasons, 1,000-yard receiving seasons, sacks, and things like that. So it's been a lot of fun to do, and I've enjoyed putting it together. Everything's free, so anybody that wants it can go download it.
Yeah, it's really phenomenal work and something that caught my eye very, early after you started doing it, and something that I've certainly leaned on, certainly something that a lot of Packer fans have leaned on because of the players that they've recently been selecting, which we'll get into just a moment. Before we jump into that, what's been kind of your, biggest moment from an RAS standpoint? I know you've done some draft work and things like that, but has there ever been a moment where you're like, holy cow, this has really kind of made an impact?
Yeah, it's this last year I did an interview for the New York Giants official team radio station on Giants.com. And that was huge for me. That was so cool to actually have some validation from an actual team perspective, right? I did that interview again, I think last week or the week before last. I did it for Giants.com again. I'm actually going to be on, I think it's NBC, maybe it's Fox, one of the news stations in New York doing an interview on the air talking about the metrics. So that's really cool to actually be validated in that way, to get a little bit of media play. And it helps that it's New York, which is kind of a big market.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal, and certainly deservedly so. You do phenomenal work, and I just love the fact that you do it for the love of it, and it's all out there, as you mentioned, for free. I know you also have a PayPal set up. If people really enjoy the scores, definitely go out and donate to that. But again, congratulations on all your success with it so far. It's really done an awesome job. Before we kind of jump in again just a little bit more, I'm curious. I know you're a Lions fan. Can you tell us just a little bit about who your favorite Lions player of all time is? And then even though they're probably kind of public enemy number one, is there a Packers player that you've kind of just had a ton of respect for, even as a Lions fan?
Yeah, and it's easy to jump in and say Barry Sanders, right? Because it's Barry. We had Barry Sanders for a decade. It was amazing. And then, of course, Calvin Johnson, we had him for nearly a decade. My current one is easily Darius Slay. He's got a big mouth on him, and I've been a fan of his since he started college. But I'm also a football historian junkie, too. I like football history as well. And the Lions had Joe Schmidt, was one of the most underappreciated players in NFL history. He owned the linebacker position for a decade. He was an all-pro, I think, 9 of the 10 years that he played in Detroit. So all-time favorite is going to always be him as a throwback, because it's not a name that gets mentioned a whole lot.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And then any Packer that's stood out to you?
Donald Driver is one of the least appreciated players, I think, that the Packers ever had. And I don't think they realized how good that they had in a player like Donald Driver. You don't get a wide receiver two that sticks on a team that long. I mean, most of the time when you have that number two receiver, they always end up leaving and going to another team to try to be that number one guy. But Donald Driver was around for, God, how long did he even play for you guys? Like forever, right?
Yeah, basically.
And he was always productive, and he was always a team player. And he's just a guy that I don't think even gets appreciated by Packers fans as much as he should. But as a Lions fan, I've always loved that dude.
That's a great answer. And I love the fact that you brought up Darius Slay as well. When I talk about really loving the draft process and being kind of a draft nerd, one of my favorite things about it is it becomes so much less about teams versus teams. And you really start developing such an enjoyment for these super talented players. And Darius Slay, earlier in my life when I didn't evaluate the draft a ton, I probably, just would have been the Packer fan that just, dislikes all the Lions and dislikes all the Vikings and so on and so forth. But Darius Slay was a player through my draft evaluation that I fell in love with very early in the process. He was one of my top 10 players actually in that draft. I absolutely loved him. And then, of course, he goes to Detroit. And it's just been a player that I've loved watching his career progress. He's got the moniker, of course, Big Play Slay, and he's not exactly a great player from a Packers standpoint, he's a certainly phenomenal player for the Lions and in the NFL as a whole, and just absolutely love watching him play.
Oh yeah, I love him. He's great. Got a mouth on him too. Never stops running.
He does, which, we got that a little bit in Jaire Alexander, and we're starting to see some of the benefits of that as well. So I think as a corner, and as a fan of a corner, you always have to love someone who can talk a little smack. So let's kind of jump in a little bit. One of the huge reasons that RAS is such a hot topic for the Packers and their fans is because really in the draft these past couple of years, they have been selecting some serious athletic players who have some very high RAS profiles. I'll kind of just start by naming some of those in the last couple drafts. So looking back at the 2017 draft, Kevin King, Josh Jones, Aaron Jones, Kofi Amichia, all of them had RAS scores above 9. Vince Beagle and D'Angelo Yancey, all above 8. Even Montrevious Adams was close to 8. And then there were a couple outliers with Devontae Mays and Malachi Dupree in the 7th round, but even those guys had a 709 and a 604. And Jamal Williams was really the outlier in the last couple drafts with, I know the scores have updated. I looked at him at a 4.68 in the version that I have currently downloaded. But then in the 2018 draft, you look at it and it was even more so the case. So everyone had a 9.0 or better in the entire 2018 draft, except Jamon Moore and Cole Madison. And of course, J.K. Scott, who didn't have one because he's a punter. But everyone else had a 9.0 or better. So this has been a metric that, whether they're using RAS specifically or not, they obviously are looking for these very high athletic profiles. And, RAS has been really an indicator of the type of players that the Packers would look for in the draft.
Yeah, and from a fan perspective, when you have a team that picks a certain way, it's a lot of fun trying to look at those guys and trying to guess which one you think that they're going to pick up because they trended that way. See, those are the guys you know you should be looking at because you know the team is looking at them.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, it makes it more fun as a fan because you can look at some of the top draft, you know, possibilities and really kind of narrow it down to take a look at who might be that next Green Bay Packer. And if you're somebody as an outsider who, you know, maybe you don't have a ton of time to dedicate to watching a ton of tape beforehand, but maybe you kind of want to go into the draft knowing some of these guys, you can throw on some quick 5 to 10 minute highlight videos of, you know, the 10 or 15 guys with the highest, you know, relative athletic score and go into the draft feeling pretty confident they're probably going to get one of those guys. And when that name is called at pick 12, that they're going to pick one of the guys that you've had a chance to watch highlights on.
Oh yeah, and then it's really surprising if they go against that. You know, most teams that pick that way, that pick the athletic guys, they don't really go away from that. And when they do, it's a surprise. So at worst case, you get a surprise out of it.
Absolutely. So kind of as you've been looking at it, Kent, has there been a team outside of the Packers that has been as predictive with RAS or a couple teams, or have the Packers been kind of the one that's been at the top of the list the past few years?
The past few years have definitely been the Packers. They've been at the top of the charts for RAS for a couple of years now. The Patriots have always been pretty big about it. In the earlier rounds, they tend to take some of the other guys in the lower rounds that have the lower scores. The Bengals have always been ones that pick generally high. Up until last year, the Ravens were one. I wish I could say the Lions, but they're kind of all over the place. But for sure, the Packers are top of there. The Eagles are another one that has done it for years. At one point, the Eagles' offensive line, their lowest athletic score on the line was Justin Peters, and it was like a 9.7 or a 9.8 or something.
Oh, wow.
It was ridiculous. And like the moment you hear Justin Peters, you're like, hey, he's not a bad athlete. He was the quote-unquote worst athlete on that line at one point.
Yeah, that's insane. And certainly it's worked out well for them. I'm kind of looking at the Packers roster as a whole. 23 out of 63 of the players that are on the roster that have an RAS score are at 9.0 or better. So basically one third of the roster. 34 out of the 63 have an 8.0 or better. So basically half of the roster. 42 out of 63 have a 7.0 or better, basically two thirds of the roster. And 55 out of 63, almost the entire roster, have an RAS of 5.0 or better. So you can almost take a look at the Packers and just eliminate anyone that has a below 5.0 score for the most part. In fact, the only draft pick that the Packers have that's still currently on the entire roster that's below a 6.25 RAS is Jamal Williams, which is really intriguing as well.
Oh, yeah. They love their athletes, man.
Yeah, so it's again, it's been something that's been super predictive for the Packers. So, Kent, obviously the Packers have added four recent free agent signings: Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, Billy Turner, Adrian Amos. What can you tell us about the RAS scores for those four players? Have they kind of maintained within those thresholds, or did they kind of go outside of it a bit?
They did a little bit, but you kind of have to squint a bit to really consider it outside. So, Adrian Amos was an easy one. He had an elite score. That one's easy. Preston Smith, another one. 9.8, so 98th percentile as an athlete. No question that they loved his athletic traits. Billy Turner, he came out as a tackle, so when he first measured, it was only around a 7, but he plays all over the line, right? He plays guard, and I'm pretty sure he's playing guard for you guys, right?
That's kind of the expectation.
Right, and he had an elite score as a guard, so it tends to be a little bit higher from a guard than a tackle. So his score was elite also at guard. Za'Darius Smith wasn't. He had a below average RAS at defensive end, but he's also a guy that plays on the interior a lot. And this is one of those few areas where I have to kind of scribble with the numbers a little bit. When you have a guy that plays either a 3-4 edge or an interior pass rusher, a guy that bounces inside on pass rushing downs. So I run him at both positions. I run him at end and at defensive tackle. He had an elite score at defensive tackle and a below average score at end, which is what I usually refer to that as just a 34 end profile, where you're below average on one and then all the way up in elite for the other one. So Za'Darius Smith was the lowest score of those guys that they picked up. But again, it's kind of a weird situation with how they use that position.
Interesting. And for those of you who listened to my show a week ago, where I kind of broke down the tape on Za'Darius Smith, you'll remember that I mentioned, you know, from an inside player, that's really where he kind of made his money. That's where he got his pressures. That's where he got his sacks. He has the ability to play all across the line. He can play that edge position. He's going to play edge a lot in Green Bay. But when you talk about him and where you see him really being a disrupting force, it's when he's lined up against a guard or a center on the interior, and he can use that athleticism on the interior that he doesn't necessarily always easily win with on the exterior. You mentioned it already, Kent. Tackles usually have a little bit better athletic profiles than guards, and Za'Darius Smith has a better athletic profile inside than he does outside. That really gives him that unique matchup advantage from an athletic standpoint. And again, that's where it absolutely screams on tape that he can quickly and athletically get to the quarterback, both from a speed and a power standpoint. So it really, really echoes what you're seeing in your analysis from an analytical standpoint.
Oh, yeah. Shortest distance to the quarterback, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's where he's definitely going to make his money. So you're obviously starting to take a really deep dive into some of these athletic profiles for the upcoming draft. Who are maybe a handful of profiles in the top 50 of the draft that really, really performed well so far and that Packer fans should keep an eye on? And maybe on the flip side, a handful that really performed badly and Packer fans can probably take them right off of the draft board.
Sure. Both of the two Iowa tight ends did amazing at the combine. Noah Fant and TJ Hockenson both ended up with elite scores. It's bounced back and forth, but I get the feeling that TJ Hockenson's probably going to be the first guy taken, and Fant will probably go a little bit later. But they're both names to pay attention to because of where the Packers are picking. So those two are easy ones. A lot of the tackles disappointed. I'll get to them in a second. But Andre Dillard from Washington State did not. He's considered the best pass protector in this draft. And he's a name to keep an eye on, not just from a Packers perspective, but an NFC North perspective. I know the Vikings are paying very close attention to him, and we don't want him to go there either if he's going to protect their quarterback.
No.
Brian Burns came in a little bit undersized, but his scores were ridiculous otherwise. His worst score from an athletic standpoint was 89th percentile. His vertical was an 89th percentile, and that was his worst athletic measurement. So wow. He's got some tools, man. I have a feeling he's going to go a little bit higher. It seems like his stock keeps going up and down, but he'll probably go really early. Outside of the first round guys, you have Chris Lindstrom from Boston College. He's a guard, came in with a top tier athletic profile. None of his measurements were below average, so he's got it all. Miles Boykin is a wide receiver out of Notre Dame. I've seen his stock a little bit lower than the top 50, but his athletic profile is one that tends to go in that top 50. He had 99.9 percentile in both of his explosion drills. He had a 43.5-inch vert and an 11.8 broad. So he's big and explosive, and that's a guy that tends to go higher in the draft. Justin Lane's a cornerback out of Michigan State, also had an elite athletic profile, and I've seen him rising, seems like nonstop. So he's probably going to go in the top 50 as well. And the last one is a name that it's probably going to be at the latter part of that top 50, but I keep hearing his name moving up every time anybody talks to him. One of those guys where they don't really have him rated in the top 50, but it feels like he's going to go there, which is Max Crosby out of Eastern Michigan. He sure. actually had the highest relative athletic score of any of the pass rushers at the combine. He measured elite in every metric except for his weight. He can't measured as a defensive end, and he's just a little bit undersized there at 255 pounds. But that's not undersized for a defense like the Packers or the Lions, so both teams should be keeping an eye on him. But he's a guy that I feel like is going to go in the top 50, even though a lot of people don't have him rated there right now.
Interesting. Great, great names to keep an eye on. And I know certainly a lot of Packer fans on the TJ Hockenson and Noah Fant and Brian Burns bandwagon. So a lot of Packer fans will be excited to hear those three names. Now, on the flip side, obviously there are some players that did not perform as expected at the combine. Who are some ones that Packer fans should probably cross off their lists?
So Jonah Williams was considered one of the top offensive tackles in the draft up until the combine. And you've kind of heard his name sliding a bit, and most of it was due to how he measured. A lot was made about his arm length. He got compared to Brian Bulaga. He got compared to Joe Thomas, and he didn't measure anywhere near either one of those guys. He only had three scores that ended up below average when it came to the actual metric standpoint, but two of the three are the most important ones for an offensive lineman in his shuttle and his cone. So he ended up just barely above average for Raz. He has a 5.4 right now. That's not good for a guy that's supposed to be the top guy in the draft. No. Greg Little's another tackle. He came in just below that. He didn't do very well either. Ja'Kai Polite out of Florida, he bombed every part of the combine, not just the metrics, but also the interviews. So he's probably not going to be, he's not going to come out of this smelling very well. He ended up with a 3.53 after the combine. He's still got a chance to make up for it at his pro day, but it wasn't a good start at all.
I'm curious what Jonah Williams' 10-yard split was in from an RAS standpoint.
Ooh, and I actually got those just today when I ran all my stuff this morning.
I'm putting you on the spot, I know.
Yep, I got it up. his 10-yard split was 1.77, which is very good. His three speed scores were the only elite scores that he had. It was the 40, 20, and 10 split.
Interesting. So I know 10-yard split is something that it seems like Packers have kind of used as a high-end metric for them. But like you said, some of those top-end metrics, he definitely didn't test as well as he would have liked, I'm sure. And it probably well enough to maybe be one of that top 10, top 15 players in the draft. So probably a player that the Packers can and Packers fans can take off of their board at number 12. And he's probably not going to be there at 30. So I'm probably not going to see Jonah Williams in green and gold this year.
Yeah. Two other guys that I wanted to mention that I feel like didn't come out smelling very good either were both of the Wisconsin guys, Michael Deiter and Ben, that guy.
You're good.
Ben Schowell, right? Isn't it Ben Schowell?
Ben Schowell. Yeah.
So neither of those guys measured out very well. They didn't measure poorly, but they didn't measure out very well either. So they ended up with above average scores, but both of them were under 6 and over 5. So just above average. That was disappointing too. I expected both of those guys to do a lot better.
And again, remember the Packers only have one draft pick on the roster that was under a 6.25, and that was Jamal Williams. So again, not a good sign if you're hoping for maybe a couple of those Badgers to come to Green Bay. Certainly not looking very, very great. All right. I know you're just a big draft guy in general. Any players that you've really fallen in love with throughout this process so far?
Oh yeah, I've got all kinds of guys. So I've always been a big tight end fan. I always loved scouting tight ends. That's one of my favorite positions to look at. Irv Smith actually did really poorly at the combine. His score ended up was it below average at one point. I think he might have got it just above average after I got all the final stuff put together. Nope, still just below average. So not so much Irv Smith, but one of my guys is Kahale Waring. It goes to San Diego State. He ended up with the third highest RAS at the combine out of tight ends. Ended up with a 9.39 as of right now. Drew Sample, I like for a weird reason. So Drew Sample out of Washington ended up with an elite score, but not one of his individual metrics were above 8. So his average that once everything gets all calculated in, he ended up with an elite score. It's an 8.8 right now, but none of his individual scores were in the 80th percentile or higher, which just never happens. I've only got a few guys that's ever happened with. So I want to see where his career goes just from a pure an analytic standpoint to see where that kind of profile goes. You know, the guy that's just a little bit better than everybody else at everything, but not elite at any one trait.
Sure.
He's a guy I want to watch. I already mentioned Max Crosby out of Eastern Michigan. He's a guy that I want to keep an eye on for sure. From linebackers, not just because he has a great name. So if you follow me on Twitter, you know I love guys with great names, but not just because of that. But Sione Takitaki out of Brigham Young, he ended up with an elite profile, but he's got a really good story. If you get a chance to look into him, he had a really rough life. He got arrested a few times. He was very troubled when he first started out in college, but he got married and he turned his life around and ended up a team captain last year. And then he came to the combine and put up an elite athletic profile, and he's going to get drafted sometime probably early day 3. But he's a really cool story and a good guy to look into. And he's got an elite athletic profile. So, of course, I got to like him for that.
Yeah, absolutely. He's hitting all of your metrics. Great name, great story, and great metrics.
Gotta love it, man.
Absolutely. All right. So definitely some names to keep an eye on now. As a Lions fan and with the Packers being in the division, kind of moving away from the draft a little bit, I'm curious at, you know, your outsider's perspective as to how the Packers have done this offseason so far. Obviously hiring a new coach in Matt LaFleur, bringing in a new coaching staff, and then also, you know, adding those 4 free agents. As a Lions fan, are you, you know, more concerned, less concerned, or, you know, equally as concerned or not concerned as you were going into the offseason about the Packers?
I feel like they've kind of been checking boxes, right? So you don't want to come into the draft worse off than you were at the beginning of the offseason. You know, you don't want to trade away your best players. You don't want to not fill any particular holes. But the Packers did a really good job last year of picking guys that maybe needed some development but had really high ceilings. You know, both the corners that they took a bunch of really athletic receivers. You know, they were trying to build pieces for this year rather than trying to get that immediate impact in 2018. So I'm more interested to see where their 2018 draft picks factor into 2019 than I am as much about their free agent signings, which isn't to say that they had bad free agent signings. Preston Smith was a great get. Za'Darius Smith was a great get. Adrian Amos was a great get. Those are all really good gets to come out of the offseason with. But mostly it's just checking boxes. They had a plan that they wanted to build long-term. Yeah, you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, who's getting a little bit longer in the tooth, but he's got some years yet. You usually don't see a team trying to build for the future, but the Packers are doing just that. They're not just in win-now mode. And a lot of teams tend to fall into that trap where they're just trying to get the last couple of years out of their quarterback. The Packers seem like they're building not just to help Aaron Rodgers out now, but also to build for whoever ends up taking over for him, which I hate to see as a Lions fan. I was kind of hoping that they would try to fizzle out after a year or two or make some really bad moves, but they're not. They look like they're building for the future.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective because I think depending on what Packer fan you talk to, there's a level of frustration that they're not maybe going a little bit more all in while they still have Aaron Rodgers playing at a pretty high level, whereas others are obviously more content with saying, let's not just, throw in everything into one or two seasons and then, hope for the best. And if you don't get a Super Bowl in those two, then what? So, but it's been a little bit of an interesting division from that standpoint. And it's interesting to hear your perspective on it. You've seen it almost as a negative as a Lions fan that you were hoping that they would go all in, whereas the Packers fans were also kind of hoping they'd go all in. So just kind of an interesting perspective.
Everybody wants to see the good teams fall apart. They don't want to see them continue to get better.
Very true. Very true. So last but not least, again, you're a huge Lions fan. Curious, your thoughts on where the Lions have headed this offseason. Obviously some really key additions with Trey Flowers, Jesse James, Justin Coleman, Danny Amendola just this weekend, Rashawn Melvin. I know there were a couple other ones in there as well. And really they kind of got things started even a little bit earlier. If you kind of go back to mid last season when they acquired Snacks Harris. So what's been your impression of this offseason for Detroit and where do you kind of see them heading into 2019?
Yeah, so the Detroit Lions are not a very exciting team right now. They were probably one of the most boring teams in the NFL last year, with the exception of a couple of weeks where they did not just where you win. You always want your team to win. But if you're a losing team, you don't want your team to be boring. And I've watched a lot of losing teams. I've been a Lions fan my whole life. But I've watched some teams that lost, and they were at least a little bit exciting. There was something around the team. There was buzz. And there just isn't that. And it isn't that the team doesn't have anything going for it. There's a lot of positives about Matt Patricia and the way that he's installing his defense. You mentioned Snacks Harrison. But honestly, when you really look at it, picking up a nose tackle and having that be your biggest addition and your best piece, that's boring. I mean, that's the guy that eats space and takes the time. And Snacks Harrison is amazing, and he's awesome, and he's really fun to follow on Twitter, and he calls people out who try to say they know things about blockers. And it's he's a good guy, and he's great. But at the same time, it's still a nose tackle. It's still a guy who's there to eat space and facilitate the rest of the defense. And that's what you've been seeing, even getting Trey Flowers. Trey Flowers had, 7.5 sacks or something like that last year. He isn't a sack master. He's got a ton of pressures that he's getting. But they didn't pick him up because they want to get that top-tier, double-digit sacks guy. They got him because he's a cog in the machine. He's a guy who's going to provide pressure off of the edge and set the edge against the run, while Snacks Harrison and A'shaun Robinson eat up space in the middle. He's a piece of the puzzle, and that's not super exciting. The same thing is true with Jesse James. They pick up a guy who's basically a tight end, a high-end tight end, too, who can block, who can catch every now and again. But he's not a burner. He's not a guy that's going to offer you a lot of route options. He's only got a few things that he can really do. So, yeah, it's a good pickup, but at the same time, it's not super exciting. There isn't really any pizzazz there. It's just another guy who's a cog in the machine. And looking forward to the draft, everybody wants that big, huge pass rusher, the top-tier tight end, so that we can open up our passing offense. I'm pretty much resigned they're going to get like a guard or something. just like, oh, yeah, another guy that's going to help the team and push things along, but it's not super exciting. You want your team to be exciting, but you want your team to win more. And the hope is that this approach is going to work. But from an actual fan excitement standpoint, there's not a whole lot going on.
No, I can definitely understand that. And, you know, sometimes as a fan, especially when a franchise is struggling, you just want something sexy to happen, you know, a big flashy free agent signing, somebody that's going to be a massive playmaker. And if at least you're not winning, at least you've got that Barry Sanders that you can lean on where, you know, you're going to have super fun every Sunday watching a specific player. So I can certainly understand that. Very, very last but not least, you know, obviously the Lions do pick four picks right before the Packers at pick eight. Anyone that the Lions have kind of been rumored to be targeting and someone that they may take, you know, before the Packers have a chance to take them?
This has actually been really quiet this offseason. The Lions have telegraphed their early picks fairly well the last couple of years, to the point where I specifically called out Kenny Golladay as being their third round pick before the first round even started a couple of years back.
Sure.
So they haven't been hiding who they've been interested in up until this year. There isn't really anybody that they're showing a ton of interest in the early rounds. I don't think anybody has any clue what they're going to do. From a Packers perspective, you know, picking a couple picks ahead, there's always somebody that they're going to take that someone out there wanted for their team. But I don't think we're going to completely rob the Packers like we did last year, taking Frank Ragnow before the Bengals. Frank Ragnow was the Bengals' top target. They picked right after us and we took him. And my Bengals fans' friends were not happy at all. I don't think there's going to be that. I would love to take a Brian Burns. I would be okay taking one of the tight ends, but I'm not even sure that's going to be the pick. I mentioned a guard as a joke, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them take someone like Garrett Bradbury, the center out of North Carolina State. I mentioned Chris Lindstrom. I don't think they're going to take him that high, but I wouldn't be surprised if they start poking around those guys because they've been building from the offensive line out and it's not off the table. And I just feel like it's going to be a shocker of a pick. Like they're going to come out and pick somebody that nobody had mocked to them again.
You know, with how quiet they're being, you know, and to really help the Packers out, you know, maybe they should go take a quarterback, Kent, you know, get all those quarterbacks gone before the Packers pick. That'd be great.
Yeah. My first mock was actually had them taking Dwayne Haskins because I wanted to see how the rest of the board would fall from a Lions perspective if they took a quarterback. And even though I prefaced that mock by saying, hey, I'm doing this purely for a thought exercise. There's still fans out there who are like, yeah, screw Stafford. You know, every team has their haters for their quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime you mention the quarterback in any capacity, you're bound to get some hot takes. There's no question about that. Kent, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been a real pleasure. I sincerely appreciate all the work that you do for the draft community, putting together not only the RAS scores, but you know, it's really easy to use. You do it for free, and I know you put a ton of time, and it's a real labor of love for you. So I really appreciate the time that you put into it. Where can people find those scores, and where can people find you on social media and read your work?
Sure, you can find me most of the time at MathBomb. On Twitter, that's MathBomb. I'm easy to find. I'll usually respond back when people ask me questions. I do have a day job, so if you get me after 5, you're much more likely to get an answer than if you get me during the day. You can find most of my work up at relativeathleticscores.com. It's my own site that I maintain. It's mostly just tables and a little bit of research. And then, of course, I write for Pride of Detroit and one of the SB Nation sites, so you can get me there. But again, Twitter, find me there. That's where I'm at.
All right. Well, Ken, thanks so much again. This was fantastic. Really appreciate it. For those listening in, make sure to listen in tomorrow as Jake and Ross continue to keep you updated with the Packers offseason. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Packaday Podcast. Follow Kent on Twitter at MathBomb. Lastly, if you haven't yet, make sure to pick up a copy of the Cheesehead TV Draft Guide. It includes some really amazing features. It's focused entirely on the Green Bay Packers. Of course, with the Packers in mind, it's going to cover, you know, all the top prospects in the draft. It includes features from some friends of the podcast, including Aaron Nagler, Michelle Bruton, Jersey Al. And it also includes full player breakdowns from Packaday Podcast's own Jake Morley, who is doing the fullbacks and kickers, Jacob Westendorf, who's doing the tight ends, Owen Reese, who's doing the interior offensive line, as well as the punters, Tyler Grzegorik, who's doing the interior defensive line, Ross Uglum, who's doing edge defenders, and I actually completed the quarterback and receivers portion of the guide as well. Again, the entire guide is geared towards Packer fans, the only draft guide that does that. You can go to cheeseheadtv.com right now and pre-order the guide for only $6.99. It goes up to $8.99 after April 5th, so make sure to get after it and get it right now. You get it before the draft. You can pick up all that great information from all those great writers, and it's just going to be a really, really great piece. piece. If you haven't seen it, they've posted last year's guide, so you can kind of take a look at it. But just really great work from a lot of great people. So make sure to go to and support them. Again, $6.99 on cheeseheadtv.com. Huge thank you again to my guest, Kent Lee Platy. Thanks so much for listening. And as always, and until next time, go Pack, go.
One kick away from the NFC Championship game from the 41. Left hash mark, 51-yard field goal attempt, snap, placement, kick to the upright, and hit it!